Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran and coming up on today's Morning Magazine. Today is Indigenous Peoples Day and yesterday an important and historic event took place in Boulder to welcome Southern and Northern Arapaho back to their traditional homelands from which their ancestors were forcibly removed. We'll hear voices from yesterday's ceremony. Then the two candidates in Colorado's 4th Congressional District race squared off in a debate in a packed auditorium at the Longmont Museum on Saturday, just minutes after the Senate voted to confirm Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. Both candidates were asked a question on sexual harassment, prompting strong response from the audience. We'll hear an excerpt of what they had to say. Then on Resistance Radio, we'll speak with the executive director of CLOR, that's Colorado Organization for Latina Opportunity and Reproductive Rights, on how to continue to resist in the wake of the Kavanaugh confirmation. On A Public Affair this morning, after the latest commentary from Jim Hightower, we'll continue our coverage of Indigenous Peoples Day with a preview of events that are happening in Boulder throughout the day. That's on Poco in Boco, our monthly look at issues facing people of colour in Boulder County. At 9 o'clock, it's media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
As heard earlier on Democracy Now!, the U.S. Senate confirmed Brett Kavanaugh to sit on the Supreme Court on Saturday. But before the vote was completed, Boulder area resident Deborah Ramirez released a statement through her lawyer that said as she watched the senators speak and vote, she felt like she was right back at Yale, where half the room was laughing and looking away as sexual violence was perpetrated on her by the nominee. But she wrote that instead of being a drunk college kids who were deliberately ignoring Kavanaugh's behavior, it was U.S. senators who were doing so. She added that this is how victims are isolated and silenced. Ramirez stated earlier that the nominee exposed himself to her and thrust his genitals in her face when the two attended Yale. Kavanaugh denies the allegations. In her statement on Saturday, Ramirez said she had corroborating witnesses whom the FBI did not interview, and she expressed her appreciation to those witnesses and also for the support she has received. She closed her statement by saying that it is a collective moment for sexual assault survivors and allies standing together, and they will not be silenced. In other news about the Kavanaugh appointment, on Saturday, protesters flooded the office of Colorado Senator Cory Gardner in downtown Denver. CBS 4 reports that one of the protesters brought her young daughters, saying that they needed to be there because Kavanaugh will be on the court for 30 years. After it was clear that the nominee had been approved, the protesters moved to the state capitol. One of them, Russell Rutsch, told CBS 4 that every win they have ever had in the Supreme Court, such as Roe versus Wade concerning the right to choose, has come from people organized in the streets demonstrating their anger. Leaders in the town of Erie held discussions with residents on Saturday afternoon about oil and gas development. The Daily Camera reports that what they are calling a community conversation follows a drilling moratorium the town had sanctioned earlier this summer. Erie resident Nancy Engel told officials that she feels a moral obligation to protect the earth for her children and grandchildren. She added that towns all around are putting restrictions on drilling, so if they don't do something soon, they are going to be the only ones that have drilling. At present, a plan by Crestone Peak Resources to drill 140 wells north of Erie is on hold, as a suit by Boulder County challenging the proposal is proceeding in court. The town's conversation on oil and gas development is part of its efforts asking residents to prioritize their concerns. Some have criticized the process that led to Erie's moratorium, saying it was abrupt and lacked transparency. Tomorrow night, the Longmont City Council is set to vote whether to authorize the purchase of more than 250 acres, preserving it as open space. According to the Daily Camera, the purchase price of what is now farmland would be over $8 million. The property lies north of Weld County Road 26 and is east of Union Reservoir. The acquisition would include water rights and provide an area for a possible trail system and wildlife corridors. Longmont City Council will meet tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Civic Center. Colorado Parks and Wildlife officials are asking the public for its help in finding the cause of a massive fish kill in the Poudre River between September 19th and 21st. The agency has taken water samples and surveyed the fish population. Staff from the Coloradoan noticed dozens of dead fish on September 21st on the banks of the river, south of Timberline Road Bridge, and also in the River Bend Ponds natural area. While some have raised the possibility that a spill from an overturned fracking truck could have killed the fish, state officials say the fluid didn't appear to reach the river. If anyone noticed anything strange on the Pooter on those 3 days, they should contact parks and wildlife officials. The National Weather Service is warning that a system will bring very cold air to northeast Colorado through the first half of the week. Freezing or below freezing temperatures can be expected tonight, and a hard killing freeze tomorrow night. Today, rain is expected to continue, and then rain and snow, with accumulation less than half an inch, and a high around 36. Snow continues into this evening until about 10 p.m., with the overnight low around 33. Tomorrow, there is a chance of snow and rain with the high near 40. Right now, it's about 37 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, yesterday in Boulder, a very special event took place. It's part of the ongoing series of events honouring Indigenous Peoples Day. A Welcome the Arapaho People Home event took place at Boulder High School. More than 100 members of the Southern and Northern Arapaho tribes were welcomed to Boulder over the weekend. It's their ancestral homeland. Boulder Valley was the winter homeland of Chief Left Hand's Band of Arapaho until 1859. That's when miners discovered gold in the foothills. The Arapaho were pushed out of the area and many were killed 5 years later when the US cavalry attacked their peaceful camp at Sand Creek. Sunday's events honoured the descendants of those who were forcibly removed from their lands. KGNU's Mabel Sanders went along to find out more.
I'm Geraldine Dakota. I'm Turtle Mountain Chippewa and my organization is Right Relationship Boulder. And that's the organization that sort of conceived of this idea of welcoming the Arapaho people home. And obviously, we didn't do this by ourselves, but we have grown from a handful of people to 30 or 40 people who attend our monthly meetings, and we have a much larger mailing list. So we have a pretty good chunk of the community that knows what we're doing and helps us when we need help. So that's why this is all coming together the way it did today, because of all the help we got.
I'm here with Suzanne Jones, the mayor of the city of Boulder, and she was a speaker here earlier at the event, and she's going to just reiterate some of the stuff that she said earlier.
Well, thank you. One of the most important things that happened here today was to welcome the Arapaho people back home to their ancestral homelands, which, as you know, used to include the Boulder Valley. And in my remarks, I thought it was important to acknowledge that those of us who are blessed to live here today have been the beneficiaries of past actions and policies that have displaced American Indians from their homelands that have led to their massacre, and it's a history that we need to acknowledge and face and make sure that it is taught correctly in our schools. And we also need to partner together with the tribes in creating a future together and forging a new path together. And this weekend is part of a larger effort to be in dialogue with the tribes and in concert with a lot of people in town. Right Relations is sort of organizing the effort to talk about what's a meaningful way to begin reconciliation and to recognize that these were their homelands and give them a place to come back home to, and also to look at renaming places like Settlers Park to a much more appropriate name that acknowledges the history there, and look for other ways to partner with the tribes going forward.
Hi, my name is Patrita Aimee Salazar. I am from the Taos and Santa Ana Pueblos of New Mexico, and I've lived in Boulder for quite some time, and I am the founder of the American Indian Youth Leadership Institute in Boulder, which helps our young people in the community unite, instill pride, and support communication between the American Indian students and the community who share similar heritage, culture, history, and experiences. And so our community of young people have been doing a lot of great things, especially around Indigenous Peoples Day.
Thank you. As far as Indigenize Your Eyes go, is that a project that is like an offshoot of that bigger organization? Or could you give me a little rundown of what the art exhibit is?
Yeah, sure. So here in the community, we have a handful of young people who have taken leadership roles as well as have engaged in some of these special projects. So Indigenize Your Eyes is a funded program or project from the Boulder Arts Commission, and what we've done is we had the community of students come together. We were able to select 10 students, 8 of which were able to commit to the project this summer. We had Jose Rivas come in and do a workshop at the Museum of Boulder, teaching them about the skills of capturing photography, connecting with people, but mainly as an Indigenous person, what perspective and how are you going to capture the community that's so important in where you live. So we had a lot of good coaching. They went out into the community. They took pictures of some of the community members and how they would like to be represented in their community. They were given cameras, they went out in the field, they were given professional guidance from professional photographers and mentors who had kept in touch with them and had given critiques on their photography and the images that they were capturing. And then they were able to pick 5 of their favorite photos, and now it's an exhibit at the Museum of Boulder. So come to support them tomorrow at the Museum of Boulder. From 3 to 4, the photographers will be there, and they'll be there talking about their images, their themes, and the whole project and of what they were able to do in the community.
And we'll hear more from Kaylee Salazar on Poco in Boco coming up this morning at 8:35 as we continue our coverage of Indigenous Peoples Day. Thanks to Mabel Sanders for that report from yesterday's ceremony. And that event that's happening at the Museum of Boulder is actually happening today from 3 o'clock. And that's part of the Indigenize Your Eyes event. And there are Indigenous Peoples Day events happening throughout the day at 9 o'clock this morning, starting on the Pearl Street Mall. Outside the courthouse, the first annual Indigenous Peoples Parade will begin. That's at 9 o'clock this morning. It's 8:16. You're listening to KGNU. On Saturday, candidates in Colorado's 4th Congressional District race, Republican incumbent Ken Buck and the Democratic challenger, Dr. Karen McCormick, took part in a debate at the Longmont Museum. The auditorium was packed and there were more than 250 people in attendance. That's the capacity of the auditorium there. So there was an overflow room where a video feed was held so other people could participate. Well, the debate took place at the same time that the Senate was voting on the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. And just moments after the Senate voted to approve Kavanaugh, both of the candidates were asked a question about sexual harassment.
Our legal system has a clear standard for accountability with regard to sexual misconduct, that standard being beyond a reasonable doubt. Americans have yet to come to such a consensus on the threshold for social penalties such as job loss and ostracization. When sexual misconduct allegations fail to meet a criminal standard, what do you believe the threshold should be for civil repercussions such as loss of employment, resigning from elected office, or being unfit for appointed positions?
Yeah, I was a prosecutor at the federal level and the state level for 25 years and prosecuted a lot of sex assault cases. And obviously sexual harassment in the worst place is different than sexual assault. But I think we should have a absolute zero tolerance for sexual assault and sexual harassment in the workplace. I think we should be much, much more strict about it. There's nothing that bothers me more than seeing a predator like Harvey Weinstein and his liberal Democrat friends take advantage of women in Hollywood and other places.
I will once again remind the audience that they agreed to remain silent for the duration of the debate.
So I feel very strongly that we need to have the penalties in place in the workplace We need to make sure that we encourage women to report. Sex crimes of all types are one of the most underreported crimes that we have in our country. And someone mentioned the Kavanaugh situation. Had that been reported earlier, we would have had a much more fair, and I'm talking about 25 years, 30 years earlier, we had a much more fair situation. I understand, I've dealt with a number of victims of sex assault, and I understand why women are reluctant to come forward. I understand in the workplace why they're reluctant to come forward. But we have to create an environment where we encourage that.
Dr. McCormick, what do you believe the threshold should be? The next person who makes noise in this auditorium will be asked to leave.
Yes, I do. For too long, since time immemorial, for too long, women's voices have not been heard on an equal level. For too long, when we do speak up, we are discounted. For too long, when we try to come forward, we are shoved aside. This happens on college campuses, it happens in high schools, it happens in workplace situations, it's happening in Supreme Court nominations, it happens everywhere, and every single one of us that has been through this on a little level or a big level knows what we're talking about. This is not about having the ability to come forward. We have been trying to come forward. We have been trying to speak with loud voices, and we're sick and tired of not being listened to and not being respected. You cannot look at Dr. Blasey Ford and say, yep, I believe what she's saying, and look at Judge Kavanaugh and say, yep, I believe what he's saying too. This is doublespeak. This does not make any sense. You have to believe somebody or the other, and we have to have a system that will actually encourage people to come forward. I know kids from my own college, my kids' college experience, that were so reluctant to come forward because it's such a process and it's so painful and there's so much doubt that goes along the way. So we have got to flip the system so that we actually encourage people to come forward with their truth and, yes, follow through on complete investigations so that we're not accusing people when they should not be accused. We certainly want to continue our justice system when everyone is considered innocent until proven guilty, but we cannot shut down people's voices that are trying so hard in such difficult conditions to actually bring their truth forward.
That's Dr. Karen McCormick, the Democratic challenger in Colorado's 4th congressional district race, in a debate there from Saturday with the Republican incumbent Ken Buck. And you can see the entire debate, which touched on a variety of issues from funding education to healthcare to oil and gas extraction. It's all online at longmontobserver.org. Well, as we heard there, Ken Buck is a former prosecutor in Weld County. He's the former DA. And back in 2010, he was criticized in a report in the Colorado Independent for his handling of a 2005 rape case. A woman alleged she was raped while she was drunk. She alleged a former lover who she'd invited over raped her, but Buck declined to prosecute the man. He told the Greeley Tribune that the jury could very well conclude that this is a case of buyer's remorse. And he was largely criticized by sexual assault victims advocacy groups at that time. And you can read more about that at the Colorado Independent website. That's coloradoindependent.com. And KGNU's partnering with the Colorado Independent for a weekly podcast looking at the hotly contested gubernatorial race here in the state of Colorado. It's called The Indicator. And you can hear it Thursday afternoons at 3 on KGNU or catch the podcast anytime. Just search for Indicator wherever you get your podcasts. That's I-N-D-Y. You can find out more online at kgnu.org. And while you're there, you can also listen to some of the debates that we have hosted here at KGNU, including last week's debate featuring candidates in Colorado's 2nd congressional district race, as well as our debate last Wednesday on Proposition 112. It's all online at kgnu.org.
Community-powered radio is not a spectator sport, and we are looking for volunteers for our Fall Fund Drive, October 10th to the 21st. We need amazing people to pick up the phones, take pledges, deliver meals, and do other things as well. Tag, you're it. Call us at 303-449-4885 to find a reason to get involved with this fund drive. You will be helping those who are not currently listener members to discover the power of KGNU Community Radio.
Find out how you can help online at kgnu.org. Well, following the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, many people are wondering what's next, particularly for the future of reproductive rights for women and women's health care. With Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, I spoke with Dusty Gurule, who is the executive director for CALOR and the CALOR Action Fund. That's the Colorado Organization for Latina Opportunity and Reproductive Rights. And I asked her, how do people continue to resist?
With every issue that CALOR works on, because we work in intersectionality, because that's how we live, right? And often policy decisions, the full gamut of policy, so whether it's from the executive branch, legislative branch, judicial branch, oftentimes our communities are disproportionately impacted. And the work that we do at CALOR is to really center and lift up those voices that are rarely part of the conversation. And that's young people, that's women of color, that's families without documentation status, incarcerated families. So all of the marginalized communities. So for this, the hearings and just everything that, you know, came out with the process of how this confirmation occurred is just so ugly. Sorry, I get emotional.
I know so many people are very upset about what's been going on. And one of the things that emerged were, I suppose, how can we have solidarity and how can women's voices be heard? And about a week or so ago, there was a big flurry on social media asking people to participate in a female blackout, where if you had a social media profile, your photo should be a black square. And the idea behind it, I suppose, saying what would happen if women's voices weren't there. And a lot of people were, you know, raising concerns about that type of approach, particularly for women of colour, who so often are desperately fighting to have their voices heard anyway in all public spaces. I mean, could you talk a little bit about how we really need, as we go forward, to have a much more inclusive space for women of colour and their voices to be heard in whatever movement now is going to come out of this?
I think the oftentimes good intentions, well appreciated, are don't land correctly. So I think the perfect example is this blackout, where it's like, okay, let's all get together without talking through it and thinking through what are the implications for everybody before you decide on what you're going to do. I think that's a similar thing that happened with the big women's march in January, is that here in Colorado specifically, there's planning really, really left out women of color until the very end, when we finally said, you know, we need to be a part of this conversation and not just an afterthought. So I think there are these examples of people wanting to, and understanding the reality, right, that we all need to work on this together, but we need to have real conversations all through the process. And before a decision is made on a tactic or a strategy, make sure that you're understanding where everyone's coming from and where it's going to, where and how it's going to hit communities. I think that good intentions sometimes get tripped up without having those conversations. And it's all about relationships, right? You don't just go to communities of color when you need something from them or when you want to appear that you're listening. If you're really true and intentional with your, you know, in this sort of globally of really wanting to build community and lift all communities, then you, that starts at the relationship level. That starts at who's on your staff. That starts at who or your board of directors. You know, the representation matters. So I think it's, there's a way to do it. And I think I'm hoping that with what's happened this past week, that appetite and that real intention of wanting to move community together is there. And I, you know, the work that we do at Color is really working with going deeper with our partners and with community and hearing voices, but also reminding other organizations about the things, the work that we do. And again, those marginalized communities. So while I feel exhausted, I am also renewed that I think there's still a lot more work to do with regard to the legislative branch, since it feels like we've lost the executive and the judicial, at least for a few years here, that, you know, this midterm election is so important both nationally, but also at the local level, because oftentimes local level is where we can really move proactive policy in addition to holding, you know, what's good without the federal encroachment of trying to take away everything that the last administration implemented.
Dusty Gurule is the executive director for Color and the Color Action Fund. That's a Colorado organization for Latina opportunity and reproductive rights.